So the language barrier has not been a thing for a while for professional companies who want to surmount that barrier, right? It's, I mean, even before AI translation, there were people that they could hire, and some of them, a lot of them did that when they wanted to work with foreigners. And these days, definitely with AI, there's much less of that. But the mental culture barrier is still very much a thing. So there's only a handful of companies in each big city and close to zero in more rural areas who want to work with foreigners, especially non-resident foreigners. And I don't think translation apps would necessarily solve that. So we can put you in touch with companies in Tokyo, a handful in Osaka, maybe one or two in Fukuoka, another one or two in Sapporo who can deal with you directly, but vast majority of the country is not that easy, unfortunately, yet. And with land banking, we have one client out of about 200 something who does that. I can't tell you that they've gained much to date. I mean, Japan's been in a good situation capital growth wise in central locations in the last 15 years, but that's on the back of 25 years of deflation, and property prices have gone past that now in Tokyo, looking that way in central Osaka, and Niseko has blown completely out of control, but the rest of the country is very much in the doldrums, so I don't know that I'd necessarily recommend that as a strategy.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now, and for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options.
All right, so just the quick update on ticket sales for the Japan Real Estate Summit. Close to half of the in-person tickets have already been sold, which is a lot more than we've sold in previous events, while still being over a month away from the event itself. So while you're probably still okay if it's a streaming ticket you're after, it's looking like in-person tickets will sell out, and probably a good few weeks ahead of the event itself, which is taking place Saturday, Sunday, 18th, 19th April, at the fabulous Pullman Hotel in Tamachi, Tokyo. All of our sponsors are speakers: Tracy Northcott, Emil Gorgis, Blanca Kobayashi, Matt Ketchum, Shumatsu Post, Brett Lee, Ben Tanaka, Alicia Kinwang, Chai Kanda, Ben Howard, Yizhang, Mark Drabkin, Robert Miller, Tatemono IQ, Mailmate, and of course, little old me. We are all waiting to see you at Japan's favorite and biggest industry event, as are, of course, all of the amazing members of our ever-growing community, both property enthusiasts and bilingual real estate professionals. So yeah, again, just under half of the in-person tickets have been sold already. So it's probably a good idea, if you know you're planning to attend, to hop over to summit.realestate.jp and grab yours today, just in case they do run out. Okay, so for today's episode, two back-to-back conversations again. This first one is with one of our favorite clients. Her name is Jordan. She's from Detroit, and she and her husband, Santi, have been corresponding with us for a while now, looking at different types of properties which they could potentially use as a holiday home when they visit Japan, and potentially rent out when they're not here. This call is our second call, which we've had late last year. They've since already visited Fukuoka City, which is where they wanted to purchase, toured the city, saw quite a few potential properties, and are now in the final stages of purchasing one of them. Our media guy joined them while they were here and also shot quite a few videos of them running around town with Tomo-san, one of our favorite bilingual real estate guys here in Fukuoka. So we'll link to those clips in the episode show notes as well. But this prep call, which you're going to listen to in a minute, is all about condos in Fukuoka, what they might be able to purchase at a fairly low budget of about $50,000. How small or old would these be in various areas of the city? How we're going to assist her with the purchase and where she can find potential listings. We also do one live deal analysis and some initial due diligence on one of the listings she found on her own, which was suspiciously cheap. We'll find out why. And we then dive into a conversation about the possibility of buying something that's already tenanted and then converting it to personal use down the track. So how does that work in Japan exactly? Which, of course, led us to a discussion about Japan's tenancy laws and why a tenanted property, what's known here as an owner change property, cannot be viewed prior to purchase, and what that actually means in practical terms. We also cover the monthly fees that condo owner unions charge here, what those include and what they're used for, and what a thorough due diligence process would look like for these units, what buyers should be aware of, cautious of, how to calculate rental yields for these types of properties, and what the application and offer process would look like normally. And then finally, we take a bit of a bird's eye view on the property market here overall, and specifically on the current anti-foreigner sentiment in government and perhaps on the street as well, what potential future restrictions on purchases by non-residents might look like. So nice little deep dive on condo units and Fukuoka City specifically, but also a bit more of a meta conversation in there. Enjoy the chat. And don't forget, there's another one coming your way right after this. Okay, so I'll just browse through your email again. We spoke, when did we speak? That was almost a year ago, wasn't it?
It was April. So it's been a long time. Not that. Yeah.
And so, you'll be in Fukuoka January 18th to the 29th. Oh, okay, right. We said we'll loop back in December to plan your trip and the viewings, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Did you have any, I'm just looking at the email. You didn't send me any sample listings or anything, right?
So I did send one.
You did?
But I sent one on November 14th, but I just went to pull it up again and it seems to be gone. So...
They go pretty quick if they're good deals, especially in a popular city like Fukuoka.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are we looking for?
Okay. So last time I spoke, you were very helpful and you made me more rational. So we are now looking for an apartment rather than a house.
Okay.
So I think that's better. And then I have like a maximum budget of like $65,000.
$65,000 at the moment is about 10 million yen. And that's just the listing price, or is that including purchase cost?
That has to include purchase cost.
Okay.
So that's like practically max capped.
Okay. So practically, let's call it 10 million yen because the rate might move a bit.
Yeah.
That gives us a listing price of 8.7 million yen-ish. That's going to be a pretty, well, definitely older, but also pretty small, maybe a bedroom plus dining kitchen if you get into the suburbs of Fukuoka, but definitely if it's central Fukuoka, it's going to be like a closet.
Yeah, for sure. That's totally understandable. And I'm also okay with it being just a studio.
Studio so Japanese size. That's like a futon.
Like 20 futon square meters, right?
No, less than that. Less than that.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. It's more like a 15, 20 if we're lucky.
Okay. I'm okay with, I think, 20 square meters plus, but... less than that is maybe a little bit small, but I'm flexible. Like I want to be realistic with my budget. So like you can be brutally honest with me if that's not possible.
Well, it's going to be, I mean, if you're okay with commuting to city center, let's say 20, 30 minutes, then that could maybe be a little bit bigger, but otherwise it'll be a tiny studio. Yeah.
Okay. And then, Since we last talked, I've also just been like researching maybe like what little areas I'm interested in. And I became quite interested in Mainohama.
That
What do
would
you
be
think
like
of that?
the edge of where I would find something reasonable if we're going west, maybe one station beyond that. I mean, we'll definitely try Meinohama Station. Let me see. The next one is what, Imajuku? What's the next one after me? Shimoyamato.
Shimoyama.
Maybe
Yeah.
Shimoyamato, which is like the next station down. It's like just an extra 2 minutes on the train, and it's also, it's not as cool as Meinohama, but it's not too far off.
That sounds good. I was also looking at the Ohashi station area.
Ohashi is going to be over your budget, unfortunately. It's getting pretty popular. So Takamiya, the one before that, is crazy expensive now.
Yeah, I saw that.
And Ohashi is the next one up. It's already, I mean, we can try, but I think we'd probably, again, similar to Meinohama, we might, what's the next one called again? We'll start with Ohashi, but we'll probably end up in blah 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 blah, Ijiri,
Okay, got
which is,
it.
I mean, they're both f about 15-minute walk to that station that you want. So you're not going to be living in the very cool area, but you'll be a relatively short walking distance to it.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. Okay, so I'll look at both of those.
If I can make a recommendation, you might want to
Yes.
consider, because I can see based on the stations you're choosing, you want to be in a kind of lively area, right?
I would like that, yeah.
So I would maybe think about what's it called? Not Chayama, Kanayama. Kanayama Station or Nanakuma Station?
Not a cool station.
Yeah, so
Okay.
that's heading. You were talking about east and west. I'm talking
Yeah.
about south.
Okay.
So if we
North and south.
focus on those three stations as a starting point, Meinohama, Kanayama, and Ohashi,
Okay, great.
we might end up one station further down the line from there, or we might end up near those stations if we're lucky.
Okay, that's awesome. I will start looking at those then. And then what are the next steps? What should I be doing? Or like
So
what should we be doing before?
normally I'd say if you were coming here like a month or two later, I would say that we can do everything on your behalf, but we're not quite there yet. We just hired two new bookkeepers and getting them up to speed, but they're probably not going to be fully functional before February, March. So we're still working in consulting mode,
Okay.
which means that I'll create, do I have you on WhatsApp? I don't have you on WhatsApp, do I?
No.
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 So I will reply to our last e or to your last email with just a blank signature, which has my mobile number in it.
Okay, great.
And then if you could ping me, are you on WhatsApp or Line or any of those?
Yeah, I have WhatsApp.
Okay. So if you could just ping me on WhatsApp, so I'll have you there. I'll then kick off a chat group with a local agent who'll be able to assist you.
Okay, that's great.
And if you want us consulting on the purchase, just to make sure you're not making, any costly
Yeah.
mistakes, raise red flags, review documents, then let me know and I'll send you a retainer invoice just for the consulting, which is a lot
Okay.
cheaper than us doing everything. I will physically not be here, unfortunately, in January. I did want to meet you face to face, but I'll be in Australia until mid-February. So I'll be helping you online, but I won't be able to physically join you. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. That's okay. Okay, so the agent that you'll connect me with, will they be able to help me like finding the properties, or should I be looking for those myself and like sending them to the agent?
Both work.
Or
Both work.
both work? Okay.
Well, I
And
mean, we'll give
then
them criteria, and then they'll help search as well. But definitely, you're always the best filter because it's a lifestyle choice, right? You know
right.
what ticks your boxes or not.
Right.
So I think a mix of both will probably be best.
Okay. And then I did have a question about just these sites I'm looking at. So I've been looking mostly at myhome.nifty.
That works.
That one's been good for me, but so the IKEA Mart people reached out to me and they gave me like a free code because like I've been posting about like this whole process on Instagram,
Oh,
and they
cool.
like I told them I was working with you, and
Oh,
they're like,
tag me too,
oh,
tag me too.
yeah, I've been tagging you on that Instagram, yeah. So I told him I was working with you, and he was so nice, and he was like, oh, well, here's a free code for a year. So I've been using IKEA Mart. But I guess I just had wanted to know your opinion about it.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it seems weirdly cheap. Everything seems quite cheap compared to like other websites that I'm looking at.
I think because you're looking at a particular budget, you're seeing the cheaper ones, but I would assume that what you're seeing are probably pretty old. But no, IKEA Mart they just copy listing from Japanese websites and put them nicely together for you in an English interface.
Just
They're
like
not.
an aggregator.
Yeah, that's all they
Okay.
do. They don't make up anything.
I was just wondering because everything on there like was like 30 to 40,000 US dollars, and I didn't see anything that was like $60,000. And so I guess I was just wondering like these $40,000 one, they're like from like the 80s and 90s. Is that like too? Like, why would it be so cheap, I guess, is my question.
I'd probably avoid the 80s because that's what. Do you have a few sample listings that we can have a quick look at together?
Sure. Let me grab one real quick here.
Yes. Drop it in the chat and I'll share my screen. We'll have a look.
Sure. Let me find where I saved them.
I'm looking for you on LinkedIn. There's a lot of Jordan Nguyen there.
Oh
On
yes,
LinkedIn, not LinkedIn, sorry, on Instagram.
my Instagram is called, let me drop it in the chat here.
Don't be shy to say it out loud. We'll give you some love on the podcast.
It's just Shire Japan. I'm really into Lord of the Rings, so it's the Shire.
Join the club.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, your whole profile is all about Japan real estate. That's very cool.
Yeah, this one's just my Japan real estate one.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, I'll keep it open so I can give you some love there, and we'll put it in the show notes too. Okay, so, oh, you didn't give me the listing yet.
I didn't. I think I didn't save my things on accident, so I don't want to waste your time. But
Are you sure?
I'll just.
I'm happy to wait. It's good for the podcast too, and it'll give you a better clue of what to look for.
Okay, one moment, then let me pull something
No,
up.
no rush at all. Take your time.
And then, so you think the 80s is like too old, maybe?
Well, what the 80s basically means is the building is going to be 40 years plus, which means that building fees will start escalating pretty quickly at this age, which is probably why people are selling it cheap because they want to do that before they start paying hundreds of bucks a month. Probably, or it could mean that it's a longer. But by the way, we didn't mention that, but how long of a walk from the station would be comfortable for you?
Think like 15 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay, so you're already looking at stuff that's cheaper because most Japanese tenants and landlords would be looking at 10 minutes or less to make it easier to find tenants. So 15 minutes, as long as it's okay for you, and as long as you're aware that in the future, let's say in the future, if you're not using the property yourself and you want to rent it out, then you'll have more vacancies because 15 minutes for Japanese tenants is a lot.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Let me, okay, I just dropped one in the
Okay.
chat there.
Let's have a look.
Like this one is so cheap. Like to me, it seems way too cheap because it's right by that Ohori station. Maybe it's like.
Yeah, that's a bit sus. Let me open the original website.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable. tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
Okay, 2.3 million. So first of all, as you can see, it's 16 square meters. So it's really tiny.
Tiny.
Yeah, it's officially a 1K and not a 1R, but that just means there's a door between the kitchenette and the living room. Otherwise, it's basically a studio. Mm. 9 minute walk to Ohori Park Station. Okay, so this is how many floors? Probably not too many floors in the building, right? Yeah, three floors. So this is a, and this is, oh no, three out of, third floor out of 10. Okay, so first of all, if you see here, they're not quoting management fees.
Yeah.
So that's a bit weird. It could mean that there's a, that it probably means that the building is self-managed, which for a large building like that is a bit dodge.
A 10 floor building
should have a building management company in place, because that's a lot for owners to self-manage.
Right. So yeah.
That means that they're probably, I guess we'll have to inquire to find out, but they're probably hitting owners up for repairs whenever those come. Not repairs, for management fees. I mean, usually what we actually see is in these kind of cases is they charge a certain amount for management fees, but no reserve funds. And then whenever something breaks down or there's a renovation, then they hit up owners. Here it's the other way around, so it's a little bit strange.
Yeah.
We'll need to make some inquiries to find out. And it's also rented out. So you'll have a tenant in there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the other reason this is cheap is probably because it's being sold as an investment unit. So if the owner union and building maintenance situation does check out, what you could potentially do if you want to nab a bargain like that is maybe buy it and then wait until the tenant moves out and then use it. But that means that you, if you're buying a tenanted property, then you can't inspect the interior. So depending on how long the tenants lived there, you might be up for another 2-3 million yen for renovation if it's been there. If it's like an old man who's been there for, you know, 15 years and kept smoking in the property, you'll want to do the entire interior, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm not necessarily ruling it out. It could be a good deal, but the first thing I'll do is figure out what's the situation with the management association.
Yeah.
And then I'll try to figure out how long the tenant's been in there. And based on their profile and the length of the tenancy, we'll be able to kind of estimate how much a renovation repair would cost. But then the other thing is that in Japan, the laws are very tenant oriented, meaning you'll need to notify them 6 months before the lease is due to be renewed that you're not going to renew it. And then you'll need to offer them somewhere between 6 to 10 months of rent as compensation for basically kicking them out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they do have a legal leg to stand on. And if it's a bored old man, it's never happened to us yet, but they might make a fuss out of it, right?
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
But
That
I'm not ruling it out. Anything this close to a Hori station is good value for this money, even if it does end up costing 6 million yen, it's still within your budget, right?
right. Yeah. Okay, that's good to know. And
My
then
main concern here is to make sure that you're not suddenly hit with $4,000 every time they need to repair the exterior.
right. So what is the difference between like the repair and then the management fee?
So the management fees are for ongoing care of the common areas. In a 10-floor building like this one, there might also be an on-site manager at least a couple of days a week. Might be some shrubbery around the building. Let's look at the photos for a second. Okay, so not, I mean, there's a bit of bush here that needs to be maintained. I would assume if it's a 10-floor building, I would assume that it doesn't look like a 10. Is that part of the building? No, that's another building, right? One, two, three, four. Oh, yeah, it is 10th floor. Okay, so probably is an on-site manager a few days a week. That's what the management fees go toward, and common utility fees for cleaning and water and electricity in the lobby and that kind of thing. And then the repair reserve fund is what goes towards the bigger stuff. So repairs and renovations of the entire structure, right? So
That makes sense.
what we would check is how much they've got collected in reserve funds and what exactly they're using it for. We would check that the renovation history in the last 10 years is sufficient, or alternatively, that they have enough funds to make a big to do a big renovation when it comes up, because at a building of this age, it'll come up every 15 or so years. And regardless of all of that, since this is almost 40 years now, I would expect those fees to rise. So even if it is being managed properly, I'm assuming that we can safely, like conservatively, but safely estimate that it might go up, let's say, by two times. So up to three times this amount in the next, let's say, 5, 6 years. So if you're comfortable with eventually paying about $150 instead of the 50 that it is now, then yeah, it might be a good deal. You've got a bit of an advantage there in the sense that basically these tenanted properties, does it tell us how much it's making at the moment? That's probably the main reason actually that it's so cheap, is that it's not making enough money. And because it's a tiny studio, it's basically being sold for investors. Most people are not going to be comfortable staying or living in a tiny unit like that. Yeah, so that's the other weird thing is that it says that the property is rented out, but it doesn't say what the return actually is. Oh no, it does. Neighborhood commercial yield.
Oh, 235,000 yen annual rental income.
Yeah, so that, let me just quickly do the calc on that. So 235, 200.
It's so small,
Yeah, so
like
that's
1500.
about that's renting out for 20,000 yen a month, from which we need to deduct property management fees. Hang on, give me a second. 19.6 times 945 minus the 7,500 monthly times 12. And that's divided by 2, 3 times 1 plus 330 286. So we're dividing 132,264 by 286. No, the yield is pretty dis yeah, it's making about 4.5% net pre-tax, which is actually very good for a Hori Park area. I mean, they probably could charge a little bit more. I'm guessing they're trying to get rid of it. They're trying to get rid of it because the building is getting old, and they either know because they've read something in the owner union minutes, or they're just assuming that building fees will go up quite rapidly in the next few years. But actually, this is interesting. Like, I wouldn't mind having a look at it.
So when they're tenanted already,
Yeah.
you're not really able to go look at it, correct?
Not the
'Cause like
interior. not the interior.
Right.
You can walk around the
Right.
building, but I mean, if it's that
Yeah.
close to Ohori Station, it's going to be a good area. There's not much to look at.
Right.
I mean, we can go there and have a look and, you know, see, just have a look at the exterior, see if the building is well maintained or not, and
Yeah.
we can ask the agent to see if they can get. Normally, the seller was not going to give us the renovation history of the building and the full reserve, like the building's inspection, the building's condition report is normally only going to be available after we submit an offer.
Ah, okay.
So what we could do is if they don't provide this information in, because they need to pay for it to get that information from the owner union, and they're not going to go jump through all these hoops before they have an offer.
Right.
So if we're interested, what we could do is we could submit an offer and write on the offer that it's pending the building's condition report and pending the tenant's information. And then we'll get
Okay.
all of the information about the building and the tenant, and we'll be able to make a bit more of an informed decision. And if not, we can pull back without offending anyone because we wrote it on the offer.
That makes sense. Okay, that's great to know. So I can keep that in mind for any of the ones that are currently tenanted. Okay. That's great. And then I guess I had some questions about, I'm sure you're getting this question all the time, because like it's such a hot thing in the news about like the political stuff going on in Japan, and like there's so much anti-foreigner sentiment that's like especially all over social media.
That's a bit
So,
of obviously social media is exaggerating that, but
right.
yeah, I mean the current government got in based on a conservative voter
Right.
base and elderly folks who are just not really thinking about the future of their kids and they just want
Sure.
not to see the foreigner on the street.
Sure. So, do you think that's going to cause any issues with like buying the property or like holding on to the property in the future?
I don't have a crystal ball, but I'm
Yeah.
assuming, I mean, Japan is a first world country. They're not suddenly going to say no foreigners allowed to own any property. What they'll probably do is, I guess if they're thinking practically and not just, you know, running the economy into the ground, then what they'll probably do is do something like Singapore or Australia or other places have done, which is, put on some additional tax on non-resident property purchases. Maybe like Australia, for example, only allows non-residents to buy brand new developments. It doesn't let you buy anything secondhand, right? Something like that. If that happens, then yes, that might lock people out of the market. But in Japan's case is, I mean, Tokyo, Niseko, maybe a handful of big cities are, you know, prices are going up pretty high, but as you can see, even in Fukuoka City, you're finding properties this cheap. If they blanket kind of lock out foreigners altogether and making it impossible for them to buy, I think they're very well aware of what will happen to the property market in other locations that are not central Tokyo and Niseko. I think they'll be a bit more reasonable. What I've seen with Takae-san is that, the way she was speaking during the election campaign and right after it is a little bit different to what she's doing in practice. So even when she makes some kind of statement, she kind of clarifies and then, you know, steps back a little bit from it after. I don't think she's unreasonable. I think she's just an opportunistic politician. So she's catering to her voter
Of
base.
course,
But then practically, I haven't seen any. Like what I have seen is a change to the business manager visa regulations, which I mean, it's really putting Japan on par with other countries. I'd argue that Japan is not in the same situation. It's not as attractive for business owners to come here. So maybe there was a bit of lack of thought there. I've seen them making a big fuss about non-residents having to report their property purchases, but that law has been in effect for over a decade. It just was never enforced. That's the only thing. And like we and other companies that are cautious because we are working with foreigners, we've been reporting this from day one because that's what the law says, even though Japanese agents are not always aware of that, right?
Got it.
So I think it'll be tightening up existing measures and maybe putting some minor ones on addition on top of that just to make it look good. But I mean, Japan's been the only country in Asia Pacific where there haven't been any restrictions on non-resident purchases. So if they tighten up a bit, they're just kind of, you know, drawing a line together with other
Following
countries.
suit, yeah. That makes sense.
I think
Okay.
so. I hope so. But again, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't say.
Yeah, of course. That's good to hear from you though. And then just moving forward, so since you're on the consulting basis right now, what exactly does that look like in terms of, like if I go through and make an offer on something and then it comes to the paperwork phase, would that be something that you would assist with?
We would
Or
assist on the consulting route. What we would be doing is, because the agent I'll be putting you in touch with is a foreigner-friendly English-speaking, I mean English-speaking in a Japanese context. They're not super fluent, but they definitely have worked with foreigners. They're able to handle everything remotely on your behalf, same as we would have done logistically.
Okay.
So we'll be in the WhatsApp chat group with them. We'll be guiding them on the due diligence that we want done. We'll be
Okay.
reviewing all of the paperwork before you sign and commit to anything, just to make sure that there's no surprises in there. And
Okay.
we'll be hand-holding you all the way until you end up with the title deed.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah.
That works out good.
It's
Okay.
very, I mean, the bottom line, the end result will be exactly the same as it would have been if we were doing everything on your behalf. It's just that you'll be a bit more involved, signing more papers, transferring
Okay.
money to the agent instead of to us, and then they'll just
Okay.
you'll just be more hands-on, but we'll be there every step of the way.
Okay, that's fine. I work remote, so I have a lot of time on my hands.
Awesome. Yeah.
That sounds good. Okay, well, then for now, I will send you a message on WhatsApp so that you
Yep.
can connect me, and I'll start looking and around those station areas and working with that agent. So that all sounds good to me. So do you think it's realistic then that when I come in the end period of January, you think the agent would be able to like show me around some places if they're not tenanted?
Yeah, absolutely. That's plenty
Okay.
of time. We started now, so I guess we'll have a short list by mid-December.
Yeah, definitely.
Actually, the only fear is that maybe they might not be available by the time you get here.
Right.
So he might have to revisit the list when everybody gets back to work, somewhere around the second week of January. And then, if anything's unavailable, we'll quickly try to find some replacements.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, I will be in Japan from January 10th through 31st, so I feel like it gives us a good amount of time to
Yeah, more than enough. I
get to
think we're
that.
good with the timeline, except the fact that I won't be here, which is a shame, but otherwise, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a shame. Hopefully next time we'll meet then, especially if I have a place in Fukuoka
Yeah, that's it.
then.
You're going to be here at least once a year, right?
Yeah, at least. So, thank you very much. I think that's all of the questions I have, so I'll send you a WhatsApp message.
Perfect. Talk to you soon, and we'll get started. Exciting.
Yay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Anytime. See you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Now, if you're actively looking at property in Japan, you should check out Akiya Mart. That's Akiya hyphen Mart, Mart, akiyamart.com. It's the Zillow of Japan, built for buyers who are actively hunting for a home in Japan and want a much more Western-style web browsing experience than the typical local Japanese websites. Now, we've got an exclusive 30% off promo code for the Akiya Mart Pro annual plan. That's the one that gives you full access to Airbnb zoning maps, hazard maps, sold data, and over 500,000 listings nationwide at any given time. So if you're serious about buying in Japan and you want an easier way to search, this is the best tool that we know of. So you can use my code ZIV, ZIV at checkout and get 30% off your Akiya Mart Pro annual plan at akiyamart.com. All right, yeah. So, as mentioned, you can see more of Jordan in this episode show notes. We've linked to her Instagram profile as well, and those video clips we took with herself, her husband, and Tomo-san, the agent who assisted them here on the ground. Go check them out on our YouTube channel if you'd like to see more. Now, for the second call, this was a pretty unique one, in my experience at least, with a more speculative buyer, and he's looking specifically for super cheap land-only assets or land with a bit of a rundown shack on it anywhere around the country for the stated purpose of land banking, meaning purchasing and basically sitting on a plot of land that he thinks may gain in value in the future, with or without that older Akiya on it, for potential future buyers who may wish to build something on it or overhaul the existing old structure and sell it in the future with a livable property on it for a profit. That obviously led us to a deeper conversation about Japan's economy and property market overall, and how one could potentially be more bullish or bearish about it. And again, we also touch on the current administration and the potential restrictions that may come into play in the near or medium future as far as non-resident buyers are concerned. We also talk some more practical stuff, how to work with Japanese professionals, the culture, the language gaps, where he might want to buy these land plots that he's looking for, and how much they might cost, including a breakdown of the actual purchase costs for cheaper properties specifically, how viewings work, in person or remotely, and finally, does he need our help or consulting on the purchase? You might find our answer there surprising. So have a listen to the very end and let me know what you thought. Enjoy this last chat, and I'll see you again one last time on the other side. So what exactly are we looking for?
Well, I was looking at kind of the currency and exchange rates, and I think Japan's a really cool place. And I was actually thinking of more of a land banking situation.
Hoping that value will go up.
So a little bit of sort of a tech angle on it as well, where I was, thinking, okay, it is right now, the last time I went to Japan, the language barrier was kind of a challenge. And like I could see things like AI translators making things easier on that front. And then also, I don't know, for let's say renovating a house, I think in the next couple of years, things could get a little bit easier. And so that could make the value prop of going and doing something that is a renovation quite a bit better, particularly in a country where labor costs aren't necessarily cheap. So that was what was in my head thinking about this.
Can I jump in with comments and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. So the language barrier has not been a thing for a while for professional companies who want to surmount that barrier, right? I mean, even before AI translation, there were people that they could hire, and some of them, a lot of them did that when they wanted to work with foreigners. And these days, definitely with AI, there's much less of that. But the mental culture barrier is still very much a thing. So there's only a handful of companies in each big city and close to zero in more rural areas who want to work with foreigners, especially non-resident foreigners. And I don't think translation apps would necessarily solve that. So we can put you in touch with companies in Tokyo, a handful in Osaka, maybe one or two in Fukuoka, another one or two in Sapporo who can deal with you directly, but vast majority of the country is not that easy, unfortunately, yet. And with land
Yes.
banking, we have one client out of about 200 something who does that. I can't tell you that they've gained much to date. I mean, Japan's been in a good situation capital growth wise in central locations in the last 15 years, but that's on the back of 25 years of deflation, and property prices have gone past that now in Tokyo, looking that way in central Osaka, and Niseko is blown completely out of control, but the rest of the country is very much in the doldrums, so I don't know that I'd necessarily recommend that as a strategy.
Yeah, so sorry, can you elaborate a little bit more about why that isn't potentially a good strategy?
Well, just because of the headwinds, the population and workforce decline, the debt to GDP ratio, the macroeconomic factors that we have around here with China and everything that's been happening, it's just a little bit too much crystal ball-y for me to actually knowledgeably comment on. It's great if it happens, and occasionally it has been happening in some locations, but I just hesitate to bank on that as a strategy. That's all.
I don't necessarily need it to be something that pays off in the next 2 years or 10 years. This is the kind of thing where I think I could go and get something and leave it for until it becomes a feasible thing. I've got all kinds of harebrained ideas about how I don't know, the Optimus robots are going to help folks doing construction projects and stuff. And so I think that I'm just kind of looking to diversify a little bit as well. And so the idea is that I'd kind of just go get some things that would be projects, but I'm not going to deal with renters and things, pay the taxes every year, And then as soon
Oh,
as this does
sorry, maybe
become
I misunderstood. So you're not looking to land bank in the sense of buying something and sitting on it and just covering costs. You're looking to invest in something that will generate cash flow until if and when it.
Oh no. No, land
Okay.
banking, sitting on it, paying the taxes, and I think that things could change pretty radically within, and I tend to be a little bit optimistic about stuff, but I think the next 3 to 5 years things could change. The whole situation could change pretty radically, in sort of the way that I'm envisioning things playing out. Big Tesla fan person here, so like I think about things like the Optimus robots. And I think it would be nice to put a little bookmark in Japan for myself, and wait to see if these ideas play out.
Okay, so you're talking about buying land and basically sitting on it.
Correct.
Okay, that we're happy to
Yeah.
help with that as long as you've noted all the caveats and you're happy with what you're getting into.
Yes, but I agree that like with things as they look right now, you're totally correct. Like, if we're sort of considering things the way they are now with the declining population still and the China situation next door, you are 100% correct, and I hear you that it doesn't make sense unless some significant factors change.
Yeah. And you know that the recent government voted in is not exactly friendly to foreigner purchases overall, yeah.
I actually didn't know that about them. Like, I know they have certain ideas about like I've gotten to see some things about them, but are they going to potentially be putting a stop to that at all, or what are their thoughts on it?
Again, it's a bit crystal balling, but I'm assuming Japan being a developed country and the only place in Asia Pacific where there were virtually no limitations on foreign ownership so far, I'm assuming they'll take it step by step. But they have been pretty radical with what they've done to the business manager visa. And just now they're discussing further limiting foreigner visas into the country. The law that says non-resident foreigners need to report their purchases to the Bank of Japan has been in place for at least a decade and a half that we've been in business, but now nobody actually enforced it until now. Now they are enforcing it, and I mean, we've been doing it anyway, so we don't care about that part, but they're also talking about other measures that they're investigating what other countries are doing and will instill further measures. So I'm assuming that will take some form of shape of an additional tax if you're not a resident, or potentially, like Australia, for example, limited purchases to only brand new developments if you're not a resident, right? So you can't buy secondhand, you can't buy just the land. So I don't know what they'll implement, but they're definitely talking about implementing something.
Okay, then that's all the more reason to get cracking. I've seen a couple of these things where the doors on things that are good tend to swing shut. Yeah, that's just for me a reason to move a little quicker.
Yep, not a problem. Just making sure you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so if do you have any specific criteria, location, size of land, type of land, budget?
Yeah, I mean, I was like the I was looking at a couple of different things. I was looking sort of so I like the Niseko thing because the Japan powder is awesome.
Yeah.
But
So I hear. I'm not much of a
but
ski head myself, but yeah.
I was thinking a little bit north of there, like Otaru could be not so bad. I was noticing a lot of stuff around there that sort of fit that description. A little bit more rural, I think makes sense. So like if
Otaru
anything
has been
is
getting pretty popular. We have a lot of customers who are active in Otaru, actually.
cool. That's good. So anything that's a little more rural, I would think about doing a couple of small things. Just sort of like I was thinking maybe one north, one in this middle of the Japan, and then maybe one south as well. And that was the thought, but it may not be a reasonable thought. To be seen, yeah.
Well, I mean, Niseko is probably as much of a bubble as anywhere else, I would say, but Otaru is still not. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Niseko will go up further again. Can't say for sure, but probably better chance of appreciation in other places, I would think. But I don't know. You're the boss. Again, it's all speculative from my perspective. So you're the boss in that regard.
Yeah, fair enough. I definitely I was looking in the Seiko area and I was like, oh, okay, that's very much the Western prices for these things. And then I was like,
Yeah, kind of
but
like
you
Tokyo,
know,
right? Yeah.
a little outside of there, not so much.
Okay, so Otaru, further north, I don't know, maybe Asahikawa, Furano. Oh, Furano is probably getting a bit expensive too. Asahikawa might be a good spot. We'll chat to some of the Hokkaido agents. They'll probably have better feedback than I would on that. And when you say further south, what kind of locations are we thinking there?
I wasn't actually in my head, you know, thinking of specific towns. The whole self-driving car thing is very much on my mind as well. I think that's about to be a thing. And so farther from train stations, farther from anything, that's a criteria that would be good. But you know, things stay warm and the like not necess what is the island that's down below that I'm thinking of? I should have
There's
a map up.
Shikoku and there's Kyushu.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Kyushu is where Fukuoka City, Kumamoto City, Miyazaki City, I think that's the one you're referring to, because Shikoku is pretty rural.
Yeah. But I don't have, you know, super strong preferences about those things. It's just, you know, let's something out in the sticks, something a little bit beat up, in each of these places. And if there's something that doesn't fit those criteria, I'm down to go after that as well.
But we're talking about
Yeah.
strictly land, yeah?
Not necessarily strictly land. I mean, ideally, like full-on IKEAs, just not in good shape at all, would take a lot of labor to make them like broken down. So ideally, somebody else is looking at that and they're like, oh, okay, that has landslide risk or asbestos, or it is just kind of totally busted and falling down, and they see the obstruction cost as a part of this. I do not see the obstruction cost because I think that land itself, like I was looking at the prices, and it's higher than the stuff that is, or at least in what I was seeing, it appeared to be a little higher than even things that have a building that would be considered an obstruction, or a building that had is has such serious work that it's very problematic.
Yeah, that's very correct. Yeah. Okay, so
So
but you
that's
don't really care about the structure just in the sense that it might make the price cheaper to purchase.
correct.
Okay, and then you're gonna just leave it there to rot kind of thing if and when you want to do something within the future.
Correct. And I do like I don't think that that'll necessarily be a super long-term thing, but that's the near-term plan, yes.
Got it. Okay, well, in that case, the world, or rather Japan, is your oyster. We got a lot of that. Yeah. Okay, and budget per parcel? Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in Web Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top of the list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com. and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, Robert at Innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
I don't know. I was looking to maybe I was looking to maybe sink like probably under 100 into this whole project, but I don't know.
So about 50-ish or divided one way or the other, 100 for the two of them.
Well, I was thinking about like, yeah, really as low as you're able to go with these things, because I would do as many as I could for whatever the budget. I was kind of hoping to keep the project around like 50, 60, but like, yeah, I mean, I could easily go up to 100 or more. Like, it's more sort of, you know, what we managed to find, but trying to find things that are, you know, fully strictly, you know, the very busted, broken down things that are not of particular value to other people. And I could see, you know, a situation where our fees cost more than the house itself. And I'm comfortable with that.
Well, the minimum realtor fee these days is 330,000 yen. So even if you're buying something that's 1,000 or 2,000 bucks, the realtor fee will cost more than that.
Yes.
And depending on whether the listing agent is open to cooperating with a proxy or a buyer's agent, which would mean sharing their commission, if they refuse, then you'll have the option to pay the buyer's agent separately. But in that case, it would be 660,000. So you'll have to pay both of them, as opposed to a situation where your agent charges you and the listing agent charges the seller, which is how it would normally go.
Correct. And I'm comfortable with that situation where, you know, we're even picking things up, where, you know, we're the fees could be like, so it depends on what you're finding, but I'm like, for something that has a little bit more land attached to it, I'd be perfectly happy with, you know, bringing the price up to a couple of tens of thousands of dollars. But if it's mostly just like we're buying the rights to a broken down structure, going lower than that probably makes more sense.
Okay. I mean, I doubt with all, because the lawyer has a minimum that they charge as well for the transaction. I doubt you'll get away, regardless of what the price is, you probably won't get away with less than, I'd say, 1 million or 2 million yen per parcel.
Yep.
But we could potentially fit 3 or 4 or 5-ish into the 100K, or less than that if you want to invest less than that. Because from anybody else's perspective, we're going for the bottom of the barrel kind of stuff, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. If that's the case, I think the best thing to do would be for me to put you in touch with one realtor in Hokkaido, one realtor in Fukuoka City.
That makes sense.
The one in Fukuoka City, which is covering, I mean, he will happily cover anywhere, but there's a limit to how far he will go. So when it comes to actual viewings, you might need to loop us back in to send somebody in to go there and view it. Or if you're here, you can do it in person. But you'll still need to have somebody accompany you, because the listing agent is usually going to be a bit foreigner shy.
I was going to mention that I'm perfectly comfortable skipping a bunch of due diligence.
Nobody will sell you vacant land without a viewing taking place.
Okay. If that's their protocols, then who am I to say no?
Yeah, sorry. So you will, whether it's with you or on their own, you will need to pay somebody, unless it's in the realtor's home city, but we're not looking at a city, we're looking at rural areas. So you'll, I'd say 100% likely to have to send somebody in for a remote viewing trip. Yeah.
And that's an interesting cultural quirk.
I mean, they just, Japanese being Japanese, they want to avoid any potential issue down the track. If somebody buys something and say, hang on, you told me this and this is, they want you to view it in person before they'll take an offer.
Okay, that's okay. Well, we can do that.
Yeah. So just to save on the trip costs, probably best if we line up 5 or 6 properties in each area so they can make a day of it and not have to go 3, 4, or 5 times.
That makes sense.
And okay, so I will instruct, I mean, I would normally say that we can consult you on the purchase, hold your hand, help you with due diligence, review documents before you sign them, that kind of thing. But With what you're buying, I don't know if there'll be much advice that I can give along the way, except this is a really piece of crap kind of, right? Which is really what you're
Yes.
looking for.
Yeah.
So you're probably
I
okay.
mean,
Yeah, go
when I
ahead.
pop down to Google Street View, I do want, so ideally, by like the structure should be garbage, but like still looking for something of a nice area or a reason to be there, something like in Otaru, like I could go a little bit more urban there because the idea would be that it'll eventually be a ski house. But like ideally the mainland stuff, like if you pop down to Google Street View, we should be looking to find something that's very in a pretty area,
Pretty
something more rural.
landscape-wise, or pretty, or do you want it also to be activity-rich for tourists and stuff, or domestic or international tourism, whichever?
Activities do not matter at all, just pretty
Okay.
landscape-wise, so that like and I'm perfectly happy vetting this by that pop down into Google Street View, but the structure can be crap. The area ideally something a little bit more rural around it, because I know a lot of this stuff can like a ton of these things are very hemmed in, and it's little
Yep.
tiny parcels right next to five other houses. If we're able to get away
But you
from
do want
that.
it buildable, right? You do want to be able to construct at least a residential single family home on it in the future. It can be zoned out of that completely, right?
Correct, or to have a broken down residential home on it currently that could be rebuilt.
Yeah. Okay. So because some of these parcels, again, they might have been constructed on in a time where nobody cared much, but these days you have to have a certain width of access road for emergency vehicles. It can be completely surrounded by no public or private roads whatsoever. Some of them are on sloped forest land, which is not going to be rebuildable without some significant cutting down of trees and stuff. So we're not looking for those. We're looking for something that's rebuildable, right?
No, access is not something that I consider a problem,
No,
nor
but from a legal
is
perspective, you might not
slope.
be able to build without the access.
As long as it could technically be maintained, as in like you wouldn't be doing a new structure, but you would be, recreating what's currently there, that's not a problem. As long as there is an existing structure, even though like you can't go and, put a even if you couldn't get something new zoned on there, as long as you would be able to repair something on there, that would be okay. And like I'm okay with landslide risk. I'm okay with large like yeah, access, landslide, those kinds of things, not something that I feel worried about.
Well, the only issue there is that the local municipality will have slightly varying regulations, but essentially, if the foundation of the existing structure is beyond repair, then that's not a renovation. That's going to be legally a rebuild. And then you're not going to be able to do that if the land is zoned as non-rebuildable.
Okay, I need to think
So
through
if, for
this carefully.
example, if we have we take Kumamoto, for example, which is, had a massive earthquake about 8, 9 years ago. That could easily destroy the foundation beyond repair, and then you will not be able to build on it. No. Also, those older structures are in vast majority of cases not going to be insurable, so it's not like you're going to get compensation and go build elsewhere, right?
True. Even those, I think, are probably a risk that I'm comfortable taking.
Okay.
Again, these are little bookmarks. They're I expect if we go ahead and get four of these things, I expect that maybe one or two of them, like there ends up being, but like I'm
Somebody
trying
will
not to
buy
look
them
a
for
little
a
farther
glamping
out.
site in the future or something.
Yeah, or so, something along those lines. It's
Okay.
very much sort of a future tech play.
Got it.
Is the
Got it. So we're looking for land parcels as big as we can get them, as cheap as we can get them in beautiful landscape areas. And we don't
Yes.
really care about anything else. If there's a structure there which brings down the price, we're happy. Otherwise, we don't care.
Correct. And I think that a structure tends to be, even in the cases where they would argue that it's not rebuildable, like I wonder if, that like that indicates some possibility of rebuildability in, I don't know, 10 years or something when we can do a little bit better in terms of soil stabilization and
Zoning
access.
regulations tend to get stricter, not more lax over time, so I doubt it. If it's not rebuildable now, it's most likely not going to be rebuildable in the future as well. But again, non-permanent structures are usually not an issue. So caravan home, again, glamping site, camper vans, those are all stuff that you could probably in most cases do.
But I would feel much more comfortable if there was some kind of structure there. Like that probably is it's a positive. Yeah, like
Okay, so if it's non-rebuildable, it's better to have a structure then.
yes.
Got it. Okay, that's a very unique criteria, but I can work with that. Okay, so
Sorry, I know this is a bunch of
no,
it's a bunch of
this is
listener stuff.
interesting. This is interesting. I'll be watching closely whether we're involved or not. Okay, so did you want me to just put you in touch with the agents and jump out, or did you want us consulting on the purchases?
I mean, like,
But
yeah,
both
this
are
was like,
okay.
I don't need
Don't feel
huge.
obliged to hire us. We're busy enough, and we're happy, and we get paid by the agents anyway. So.
Well, I mean, I think that you might have some valuable insights in terms of the areas that are interesting and very pretty, although the agents might as well.
The pictures will tell us that.
That is true. Yeah, an introduction would be much appreciated.
Of course. Are you on WhatsApp or Line or any of those?
Yes.
Yeah. So I will reply to our latest. Oh, my computer's doing something. Let me do that from the phone. I will reply to your latest email with just a blank signature. And then if you. It's got my mobile number there. So you just ping me on WhatsApp and we'll take it from there. I'll throw in some introductions and see how you go. And feel free to look me back in if you do feel like you need support at any time. Again, it's not an issue.
That's much appreciated.
Oh, my pleasure. So let me just do it now so I don't forget. Yep. So you got just a blank email with my signature at the bottom. Just ping me on WhatsApp.
Awesome. Love it. I appreciate that.
Pleasure. Good luck with that. And please keep me posted regardless. I'm very interested in seeing how this pans out.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I realize it's a little bit of an odd criteria, but thanks for taking the time to chat with me. And if I'm needing to keep getting your advice, which I certainly may, that is much appreciated in the future.
Anytime. Our consulting retainers are pretty cheap. It's under, I think, at this current exchange rate, it's about $500-$600 for a 10-hour retainer, so shouldn't break the bank.
Thanks.
All right. Good luck.
Much appreciated. Bye.
Pleasure. Talk to you soon. So there you go. Bit of a unorthodox one, I thought. Would love to hear your thoughts as well. And again, one final reminder, we are just under one half of the in-person tickets sold for April's spring session of the Japan Real Estate Summit in Tokyo. Online streaming tickets are still available and probably will be until pretty close to the event itself, but we are starting to run out of in-person tickets. So if you know you'll be attending, whether it's for 1 or 2 days or both, we've got tickets for Saturday, Sunday, or the entire weekend, as well as a separate ticket for the gala dinner on the Summit page. Now's a good time to secure them. They might not last. So hop over to summit.realestate.jp and grab yours today. Can't wait to see you there on the day at the Hotel Pullman in Tamachi, Tokyo. Now, we can't let you go without telling you all about Yen Loans, our latest sponsor. They're a new non-bank lender offering financing to non-residents of Japan for purchases of Tokyo condominiums, soon to be expanding to other major cities as well. So definitely hit them up if you're looking to purchase in Osaka, Fukuoka, Kyoto, or any other big city too. And that's for any purpose, whether it's a holiday home, investment rental, or a combination of both, without any requirement for residency, a Japanese bank account, a Japanese corporate structure, or representative director, any of these things, and with a streamlined application process too. So reach out to them through the link in our show notes and let them know that you found them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. And if you're quick enough to be one of the first 10 completed applications, you'll receive a 25% discount. That's 50,000 yen off the 200,000 yen application fee. To qualify, apply through the link in our show notes again, or enter the code JREYL on their website, yenloans.com. And that's it from us for this episode, folks. Huge thank you for tuning in. Please do follow and subscribe to the show if this is your first time listening, and we'd love it if you could like and even share this episode with anyone you think might find interest in it. But even more importantly, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you thought about this episode or the podcast overall in the comments section here on our social media channels. We've got a very active Facebook group and business page, both under the name Japan Real Estate on Facebook. And that's also the name and URL of our YouTube channel if you'd like to follow us there, Japan Real Estate on YouTube as well. And we'd of course appreciate your rating or review on Spotify or on the Apple Store or wherever you're tuning in from. Hope to have you with us again. Have a great rest of the day or night ahead. よろしく。